The Bible says, be not deceived. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap.
All right, it's 4 p.m. on Wall Street. Do you know where your money is?
Welcome to Financial Issues, where we align reality with truth. Conservative talk radio you can count on. Financial issues that you need to know.
We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
We will simply apply to government the common sense that we all use in our daily lives.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celia.
Good morning. Welcome back to Financial Issues. It's Thursday, June 24th. It's great to be here. Thank you for being with us. Sure do appreciate it. Some economic data coming out. Jobs numbers did come out this morning. Well above 400,000. Still 411,000. Down slightly from 418, but nonetheless, they were expecting 380,000. Nowhere near that, that's for sure. So they're not getting what they thought they were going to get or what they were hoping to get. So none of that has happened. I need to talk a little bit about that, so I'll come back to it. Looks like all the indices are in positive territory. Finished yesterday in positive territory, slightly, pretty much stagnant all day long. The job numbers did not impact the futures numbers at all. The Dow's up almost 0.5%. S&P the same. NASDAQ just over 0.5%. Oil is down. We had a 73 handle yesterday. It is down over 0.5%. So we're at 72.61. So we closed yesterday at 73 and some change. So that is some good news there. So we'll see. I think it's going to be another day. Things have been relatively muted. These are the kinds of markets that I like. I can't say that for everybody else, but I like these kinds of markets because they become somewhat slower and easier to try to gather economic data. It also becomes a little bit easier to see how specific pieces of economic data influence the market, and that gives us some insights to when things are fast and furious. We still, the things that impacted it now will still impact it then. You just don't notice it as much when it is fast and furious. So we like that. I like to see this kind of, hey, not up dramatically, not down dramatically, just plugging along, more up days than down days. That's good. We are going through some recovery. We could be on track for another record in the NASDAQ, a record in the Dow and the S&P. So it looks like the S&P is up about 1.3% on the week. So that's good news. Needed that. Infrastructure negotiations going very well. Talk about that as well. Let me just mention India Partners. I thank you. So many of you have been giving, and we're trying to get to $50,000. I will remind all of you again. It doesn't matter if I do or not. It doesn't work, but I'll try. You can't send a donation to us and ask us to send it to India Partners. First of all, there's a sense of urgency there at India Partners. We need to get that money to them as quickly as we can. Secondly, it just causes a headache for us, and we ask you not to do that. India Partners is a separate ministry from ours. So it's interesting because you have to go to our website in order to do that. So while you're at the website, why don't you just click on the red India Partners banner? It's going to take you just as long. It isn't any harder or any easier to do it on our website as it is their website. So I would ask you to do that as a favor to Meg, our controller here at the ministry, to make life easier. It's really hard because that money comes in as a donation to us. We have to then, get it out of our ledger for the audit, getting ready for the audit for this fiscal year. and, you know, move the money over to send a check to India Partners and all that kind of stuff. It's just we'd rather you not do that. We honor it. We have to do that. We feel obligated, but it is really, I wish you wouldn't do it. It's not any more effort to click on the red banner when you get to our website and send that to India Partners. We need that done. We need India Partners. We're trying to get $50,000 to them. I'm sure we're over 10 anyway. I don't know where we are, but we sure would appreciate it if you could continue to do that and see if we can continue to feed as many people as we possibly can. It is so critical at this time. People literally dying, young children are the worst. It's hitting them so hard. We've got people traveling for miles to get a little bit of fresh water, especially nursing mothers. And we really need this to do this for the suffering, for the orphans, for the widows, and for all those families that are out of work. Our Christian brothers and sisters, though they are not many, they are dying. Pastors have died. Churches have been lost. We need to keep the strength going for the severely impoverished people right now that are going through this problem with this COVID. So hopefully you will do that. Go to financialissues.org. Click on the red banner there that says India Partners, and you can do that. All right, 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. So I talked a little bit about what is happening with jobless claims, and let me just mention to you, so yesterday, day before yesterday, we get service sectors down. We've got consumer confidence down. We've got new home sales down. Consumer sentiment flat or down as well. Consumer spending has not even reached expectations yet. I doubt that they will this month. So consumer spending down, new home sales down. People aren't spending. There seems to be a quiet. Yes, people are traveling, but we continue to see layoffs. We've seen American airline workers walking off the job, flight attendants walking off the job. So on and on it goes. So let's not get too carried away. Inflation is here to stay. Higher wages are here, but nobody is taking businesses up on their higher wages. So it really isn't helping. I think we're going to see automation start to come in with a vengeance. All of those that backed away from the automation back in 2009 through 2013 are probably very sorry they did that. Those that pushed on for automation system, wherever it might be, I know that there have been some fast food chains that have totally automated stores now. You go in, you can't. It's hard to find a person. If you can't use the touchscreen, you're probably not going to order. So everything is moving towards that, and this is going to hurry that up. One of our biggest problems is the trucking industry. The trucking industry is suffering in dramatic fashion. They can't get drivers and workers. That is a huge, huge problem. Diesel fuel prices are up dramatically. So we are seeing inflation creeping into that as well. So look, when we look at the numbers, the job numbers being up over 400,000 didn't even impact the futures market, just to say it was either baked in or they really don't care about it. More and more people coming out saying what we said months ago, that maybe this inflation isn't transitory. No kidding. There are segments of it that are. We are seeing more tax bills coming out and more meat on the bone as far as taxes that we're all going to be facing next year. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. Our phone lines are open. You're welcome to queue your call up if you want to do that. 610-363-1110. As we go through, I just want to put a plug in for news. One of the things that FISM News is covering, more than one, there are a number of things. But, you know, I was mentioning the jobless claims. And one of the things that we also covered yesterday was Amazon's Prime Day. And it saw good online sales growth, but it was a little bit more muted than it had been in the past. And again, that goes to the whole consumer thing and the consumer spending. I didn't finish my thoughts on it. Let me just say that my concern is when we look at all these things and we put them all together, we start to come to the realization that consumers, are they getting to a place where they're just hunkering down? They're just kind of satisfied with being out and about, but at the same time, still have some concerns. I don't know that the concerns are pandemic related. I don't know if that's the case, or they are more related, I think, to concerns about jobs, having a job, keeping a job, the state of the economy, possibly. I'm saying what they might be thinking, not what I believe. Possibly not being as strong as everybody says it is, which is the case, by the way. It just isn't. And if you watch some of the financial news, if you read some of the financial papers, commentaries, and analytics, you get a very overly optimistic viewpoint, because some of the things that they are articulating about, guess what, ain't really happening. It's just not real. There's no basis for it. There's no basis for what they're talking about. We are in inflationary times. We are in inflationary times where unemployment is becoming somewhat stagnant right now. That is never a good thing. Stagnation in anything is not good. And you've got a Federal Reserve that seems to be relatively convinced that staying on the sidelines is the way to go. And they will get, if it's not already too late, I don't know, but they will get so far behind the curve. If they wait until next year, they're behind the curve. If they wait until the end of next year, we will be at a point of no return. In other words, the Fed's increasing rates and the Fed's intervention is not going to work. If you're listening to me, Jerome, which I know you're not, but if you are, or any other Fed chairman or any other senator or representative on the finance committees, understand that we will get to a point where it is irrelevant what the Federal Reserve is doing. So if you're a politician that is going to be looking to the Federal Reserve to fix things, it will be too late. And I know that we appear to be far more worried about the look of all of this from a political perspective, and the look of all of this as a shot against the administration, and so therefore we don't want to do it. If we are looking at what the Federal Reserve is doing because of what the needs are for the Treasury, from the Treasury Department, for the Federal Reserve to do, then we're going to be in trouble. We're going to have a problem. So I say what I and others have been saying for 35, 40 years. When we look at a problem, and this recession is not going to, the recession that is yet to come is not going to be any different than any other, in my opinion. It is going to be as a result of failed government policies. Oh, the Capitol Hill has plenty of cover because they will blame it on banks. They will blame it on Wall Street. They will blame it on the fat cats. They will blame it on all these things. The reality of it will be that it was once again failed government policy because of the government's inability to see things for what they really are and their political desires to not do anything about it. It is all about the failure of government. And we are headed down that road. You don't have to pay attention or mark my words. Now, under normal conditions, it would be somewhat of a, you know, moot point. It wouldn't matter much. It would be somewhat irrelevant in the sense that, yeah, markets go up and markets come down. Economies thrive and economies correct and go into recession. Those things have been happening for years. And if it was normal circumstances like that, I wouldn't be talking about that now because it's probably too far off to even be thinking about it. But the fact of the matter is, when it did come, it wouldn't be relevant to our portfolios. We're long-term investors. We would sit tight. We would ride it out, maybe invest a little more money. And eventually, within the course of 9 to 13 months, of recession, we would be out of it. And that's generally how it's gone. And that's how it would go this time. But we have a wild card this time that we haven't had in a very long time. And that is a political ideology that is driving every administrative decision. And we have that going. The tax rules and regulations that they are contemplating right now on all of us is so unreasonable. It is ridiculous. I don't know how they can say, I've worked hard all my life. I've earned my income. I've been taxed on my income. I have saved as much as I could. And now I am ready to retire and my taxes are going to go up so that I can be taxed again, probably at the same rate for some of that older money that I paid when I first put that money in. You know, at some point in time, when do the American people say this is double taxation? It is not constitutional. It's got to stop. The rationale for the tax systems that are being put out is just irrational. The backbone of America is going to be harmed. The backbone of capitalism is going to be irrevocably harmed because we will be losing and giving up generational businesses, whether they be a small pizza shop going from a one generation to the next, or whether it's the family dairy farm going to the third or fourth generation. They will not be able to survive. The segment of our population that gives us such global strength is going to leave. It is going to be gone. It is going to be turned into a corporate or, God forbid, another foreign entity controlling that segment of our economy. We are giving far more up than just our freedoms and our capitalist security in society. We are giving up more than our opportunities to grow wealth because we live in a free market economy, free market capitalization, when here we will be getting taxed at such unreasonable rates that and taxed on such unreasonable things to be taxed on that the average Joe will have no choice but to roll over and accept whatever the government is willing to give them. And that is the road that we are going down. We can say it's irrelevant. We can say it's the road that politicians have very intentionally pushed us down. We can say that. I happen to be in that camp. Or we can say that is a conspiracy theory, that is lunacy, that is irrational, that is not the case at all. Then it doesn't matter how we get to this place, whether it was intentional from political desires or whether it was an unforeseen circumstances because of stupidity and ignorance of politicians. Either way, it's going to end up as the same result, and it's going to create harm on the generation that we are supposed to be passing on a better country to. We're going to lose it either way. So if we want to lament over conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory, and we want to just hunker down and we want to prep and we want to get off the grid and we want to make sure that we're only dependent on the land in which we are living, and on it goes. If we want to do that, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Knock yourself out. You can do that. You will probably be better off in the long run, but that's not going to prevent what is going to happen. That may save your family. It's not going to save America. And eventually your family is going to have to live in an America that we were unwilling or unable to save because of our viewpoints being so skewed. I was reading something today, or not reading something. I clicked on something because of the person that was presenting it, who was an incredibly credible individual, even in Christian circles. And I clicked on it and I thought, how sad is this? This is a money grab. It's nothing more than that. It's a money grab. This is a person that's getting paid an enormous amount of money to do that because there are people that are responsible for this that are making an enormous amount of money in order to be able to afford. It was wrong in my opinion, but it's happening. It's getting to the point where we can't watch or listen to anything or read anything. What's going to happen is going to happen. We should try to be fighting against it, but we can't unite.
Some of you.
Welcome back. 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do that. 610-363-1110. All right, let me go to the phones. Let me go to Larry. Larry's calling us from Florida. Hi, Larry.
Hey, how you doing, Dan?
Good.
So, Dan, in 1970, I did a paper, The Effects of Automation on the Workforce.
Uh-huh.
Individuals go into business for profit or to aid in humanity's effort to work and take care of their family.
Uh-huh.
Do we believe that extreme automation will result in more employment?
Oh, I don't. I would say that it's equally divided, about 50-50. And when you say we, I guess you mean the people in general. I don't think so, but I would say from an analytical perspective, I think analysts are, I don't think they're split. I think it's probably 60% probably don't believe that it's going to create more employment, but I think that do say that it is not going to change the employment picture, and 40% probably think it's a problem. Me personally, I think that it will probably take two generations for, if it is severe, not severe, it's not the right word, but a dramatic increase in automation. I think that it's going to be two generations, probably from a, because of education, before it starts to work, not necessarily in favor of employment, but to get us to a place where we are getting, we're close again to full employment. So I don't think it's going to be the answer to, I think there are some businesses that look at it and believe certainly it's going to be an answer to them in the long run to not more employment, less employment, not more profit, less profit, not in the short term, but an answer in consistency and continuity in their business because they're removing a human element out of the workforce. And anytime you remove a human element, especially in today's day and age, maybe not in the early 90s, 80s, and beyond, but certainly in today's workplace, removing a human element, dramatically reducing on sick time, on vacation time, on all kinds of things that can slow or keep productivity, you know, maintaining a certain level. You have to remember, you know, we are the most productive country in the world. The least productive country in the world is France. Their productivity is horrible. But a lot of that is due to they retire at 57 now. They raised it. They retired 57. And, you know, seems like they're off as much as they work. They have no desire to produce anything. So automation could solve a problem for the Marxists or the socialists like France and like where America is trending in the sense that it will replace a non-productive worker or a person that doesn't see the need to work. France has low productivity because I'm getting the milk for free. Why should I go milk the cow every day? And you know, that's been the mentality there for 30 years. So I don't know overall, I don't know of even a survey out there that indicates exactly what corporate America thinks or Americans in general think about robotics. I don't know. But I do know this, when you can't get people to come and work and you can replace that with a touchscreen in your fast food restaurant, when you can't get people to work and you can put in more tellers that are automated and systems becoming more sophisticated to replace cashiers in grocery stores and such. I know that that is going to look more and more attractive the longer we go the way we're going.
But what happens to the people?
Well, the people go on the government dime. That is part of the strategy. So if the people can't get jobs producing the automation and robotics and actually working in the plants that are building some of that. And that workforce is going to be somewhat minimized by the very same robotics and automation that they build. But nonetheless, then it goes to the government. I go back to France, which is the case study for that. We have a so-called developed nation that gives us that case study.
We got this problem that the Lord says that man should work by the sweat of his brow, and all the jobs are taken away by automation. Aren't we going in the opposite direction?
We've been going in the opposite direction for 60 years, brother. I mean, yeah, we're going in the opposite direction. I mean, if you're talking about the opposite direction of what the Lord, what his appointed things are, of course we are. We've been going there for a very, very long time. If we weren't, we wouldn't be having the depravity in the world that we have. So yes, we're going in the opposite direction, but that's nothing new. We've been doing that for a long time. Is it stepping up? Is it going quicker? Of course it is, because now we have government authorities that are embracing that movement away from what you and I would understand is the word of God and the testimonies of God. Testimonies of God in the ancient Hebrew means not only God's appointed things, but it means a standard of living. That's what God gives us. That's what his testimonies do. They give us a standard of living. And yes, we've been drifting away there. Some would argue 100 years, but yeah, for a long time. That has been elevated. That has been elevated because of present day, and I mean present day being the last 15 years, of what has happened in our society in the present day. When we start to have the will of the minority, I'm talking about the minority of people, not minorities. When we start having the will of the minority driving the agendas of the will of the majority, it's been like that for 20 years. We have a 2% of the population driving the other 98% of the population. We have 10% of business ideology driving the other 90% of business ideology, and it's getting worse every day. Yes.
All right, Dan, correct us, brother. Good, you got to correct us. Thank you so much.
All right, man, I appreciate you. God bless. Good stuff. You know, Larry stirring me up there a little bit, because not Larry, not against Larry, but just, yeah, I mean, in agreeing with exactly what he's saying, it stirs me. But the problem is it doesn't stir enough of us. And we, Larry and I and others, we are coming at the problem from a totally different foundation. We're coming at the problem from a totally different foundation. That's why I said at the pastor's conference, and what I say all the time, we have an intentional destruction of our foundation, because our foundation is going to become, well, no, it's not going to become, it is a stumbling block to the left. It is a good stumbling block. Scripture talks a lot about stumbling blocks being a bad thing, but this is a stumbling block that they cannot live with. Very simply, because it's a moral, it is a course of values of a yardstick by which they have to themselves measure themselves by, and they don't like it. It goes to the heart of what they are doing, and they don't want to have that conviction in their heart. And trust me, the destruction of that moral yardstick has to continue in order for the values to be eroded away and depravity to take over in a bigger and better way. Do you know right now, this just happened last night, the country of Hungary is under attack by the entire world because the country itself refuses to adopt the depravity that they are they are asking, being asked to adopt. All the way over to Eastern Europe, the minority of people are trying to influence.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
You know, what's interesting is I was talking to Seth there at the break, but, you know, so much of what we suffer and what we go through is, you know, there are certain groups of people that I would say that are so-called Christians. And I talk to them and I think to myself, I would rather evangelize to 100 times more people that are atheists compared to certain groups. And one of the things that is wrong with certain elements of Christianity is you can't really talk to them because they would say to me, as I was just speaking or ranting or whatever you want to call it, they would say, oh, absolutely. They think they're there. You can't, I mean, I don't know if you've ever tried. I have on more occasions that I like to think about. But if you've ever talked to somebody that's addicted to something, there's so many addictions that we have today, whatever it might be, that are in severe addiction. You can share and talk to your blue in the face. You can beat them up with a Bible. I was there. I remember having a pastor friend of mine who took me in as a young man who loved me, who just beat me up literally with the Bible. But when you think that it's irrelevant or it doesn't pertain to you, try to tell an addict they're an addict when they are convinced that they're not and don't want to give up what they're doing. They don't have a conviction to stop doing what they're doing. They don't have a conviction to do that. And try to talk to them. Now we have churches that have people in the pews that convince a pastorate of a church that we want to do this. We want to come to this church. But look, don't tell us that God isn't okay with that and then tell us that God's a loving God. We don't want to hear that. You know, we don't want to hear that if he loves us, then he's okay with this. And he loves us because we're here. We want, you know, some people won't come to the Lord because it's too easy. I'm convinced of that. It's so easy, they won't do it. Why? Because we, as humans, we like to feel and touch stuff. You know, we like things that are tough to accomplish. We like rules and regulations, even if they're wrong, that we've got to follow sometimes. So don't tell me how easy it is, because that's too easy. Something's wrong with that picture. That is because you've humanized God so much that it would be wrong in your mind or in any other human's mind, because we love to humanize God. Surely God wouldn't do this. No, you're missing God's justice. He's a just God. He has no choice. He can't have a heaven without a hell. You might not want to think about hell. You don't have to think about it. But guess what? Someday you're going to be thinking about it. Trust me. So it is just, it doesn't go away because we think it away. It doesn't go away because we don't want to think about the bad. We want to live in our world of everything is good. And we live there, so it must be okay. And we're getting by just fine. It's a rough situation. Anyway, I'm way off track here. It is Financial Issues. Last time I checked, let me go back to the phones and go to Tammy in Virginia.
Dan, I'm so glad that you said that stuff, though. That's so necessary. And I hope that pastors are listening to this as well today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Tammy.
Hi. I am a member, and I first want to thank you for your dedication and your devotion to our Lord. Mm.
Thank you, Tammy.
You're welcome. I'm almost 60 years old, and first question, I have a couple for you, but the first one is, I want to know what sector the stock is that I gave to Darlene, and did you do a sell order on that? I can't find it on the broad list.
It's not been on my broad list for 5 years.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a stock that I really love. It's a great company. And but it hasn't been on my broad list for a very, very long time. But it is an industrial stock. It's considered an industrial stock. I think, you know, so many of these industrial stocks are becoming more like technology stocks, you know, and this company is kind of similar, but, they are very much a industrial stock still, and they are I would call them a defensive stock, not defensive as in protection, defensive as in literally defense. So they're doing work for Defense Department, for the military, for allies of NATO and allies of ours. So they're doing a lot of work. This is a company that many, many years ago had an amazing breakthrough with this probably won't mean much to most people, but they developed the Patriot missile. And from the Patriot missile, amazing platforms were built for guided missiles and smart warfare. So they're a defense sector company, and they're a good one. They're strong. They do good work, but they unfortunately are spending far too much money on other agendas that have nothing to do with their work.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's something I probably should get rid of.
If you own it, yeah. I don't even know. I mean, I still follow the news about the company, and I check on it at least once a year. I have a list of about 30 stocks that I check once a year at least, or maybe even more often, to make sure they're still doing what they were doing, to keep them off my list. But, you know, they are a company that pays a decent dividend. But if you're a dividend, if you're looking for dividend and you're looking for income, there's a lot of companies on my buy list even right now that are producing. I think their dividend's about, I don't think it's 2.5, but it's up around there somewhere, a year, 2.5%, give or take. But yeah. So, I mean, it really depends on your convictions. You know, if you're trying to continue to build a biblically responsible portfolio, then yeah, this would be a company you would be compelled to sell at a good time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I also wanted to ask, what is your opinion of owning both like a stock market index fund and a bond index fund, kind of to balance each other out? And if you have any index funds on your list.
So I would say the idea behind that is okay, is fine. I think that's an okay thing to do. I have index replacement kind of index funds. As a matter of fact, TPLC is an ETF that's outperformed the S&P. It is without the sin stocks, we would say, or without the stocks that we don't want to invest in. And they've done very, very well. So, yes, I happen to be at a place where I believe a lot of bond funds are more risky than equity funds. So the only bond funds that I have are some of the inflation protected bond funds and some short term bond funds. I don't have any long term bond funds. I think that would be a mistake to be in anything mid or long term right now. I think midterm bond funds, these are bonds, this is a bond fund that is made up primarily of bonds that are going to mature in 3 to 5 years, would be midterm bond funds. I'm not even liking them right now because interest rates are so volatile. That's going to impact those funds. So I'm okay with short-term bond funds. I'm okay with inflation-protected bond funds. I think, you know, there's some merit to owning those for sure. So I would be okay with one of those. I don't like a total market index fund, say bond fund. I'm not a fan of those. But again, a lot of that, yes, of course, they're not biblically responsible. But aside from that, I just think the monetary environment that we're in, I'd rather own equities. I just would. I'd rather own an equity index. They're not working like they used to. And those of us that have been around a long time, you know, we still, I don't, but we still have a mindset that, you know, well, when stocks are going down, you know, bonds are going to go up. Those days have long been gone, and it just hasn't worked like that in a very long time. And I don't think it will next time we have a severe downturn.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Tammy. Glad you called. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. All right, folks, we'll be back. Our phone lines are open 610-363-1110 as we end this hour. I hope you have a great day. If you got to leave us, we've got two more hours. Stay with us. We'll be back.
We will never compromise our principles and standards. We will never give away our freedom. We will never abandon our belief in God.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.
We in America should be grateful to God for the blessings He's given us.
Don't let anyone tell you that America's best days are behind her.
We have got to fight for this nation because I believe with all my heart this nation is in fact one nation under God.
Welcome back. 610-363-1110. You can queue your call up. We got lines open. This is first segment, second hour, which we do our ag report. So important. So many things going on and on the commodity front that we've got to be careful about, concerned about, and watch very closely. So Craig Haggard will be with us here. But right now we've got our news break. You can watch our news tonight, 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock live tonight on FISM.TV. FISM.TV. So make sure you check it out. Our half-hour news program. I got a great, I got some great feedback on Tuesday's program, so I was excited about that from some friends that I sent the link to. So it was good to hear that. And it is something you don't want to miss. You really got to stay tuned. You really got to get to our website, fism.tv/news. So I hope you'll check it out. There's some great stuff on there right now this morning that you might want to check out. And Sam Case is here from FISM News. I hope we're going to hear a little bit about Biden's talk yesterday and or his proposals and such. And I guess there's going to be some things on the website about that. Sam, welcome.
Thank you, Dan. And I also want to encourage people to watch tonight because Ian's been out this week. He's been in Grapevine, Texas at NRB. And he's got quite a few good interviews that from that convention, and we'll be playing some of those tonight, some that aren't up on the site yet. So you'll want to check that out, too, to see what's been going on. There's a lot of fun ones. But yes, President Biden yesterday discussed new gun control policies. So the left just never sleeps. They just got done taking that loss on H.R. 1, the voting rights bill, and instantly they're pivoting to something else. They're pivoting to gun control, which is something that Biden really likes to use, is gun control. It's been an issue of his for quite a while. In the announcement, Biden said that crime historically rises during the summer. I just want to break down some of the funny things that he did say about this. And he said that the more traditional summer spikes may be more pronounced this year, and that's why he's announcing this gun control. And it's not because of last summer, where we saw cities burning to the ground with race riots and Democrat mayors telling their officers to stand down, encouraging crime, actually, by calling for defunding the police. No, no, no. Biden says the reason why there's going to be more crime this summer is because we're coming off a pandemic and there's less jobs for inner city youths and people like that. So
I was afraid it was because of less police. I mean, you know.
Of course, it couldn't be that, right? No.
Let's demonize the police for 2 years and let's see what happens to crime. Don't even get me started. I was on this yesterday, so I don't need to go on it.
You know what's really funny, too, is he even acknowledges that in Democrat cities where there is stricter gun control, there's also higher crime. But that's not because of the policies. That's because there's looser gun control in all those bad red states, and those get smuggled in to the great and wonderful blue states. That's his reasoning. Yeah. The ideas that he proposed are just the same old kind of things we've heard before. Nothing really new. It's just increased background checks, bans on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Assault weapons is a phrase that left loves to throw around because it's very vague. It's never really been defined what an assault weapon is. You can have two weapons that have basically the same ammo capacity and firepower, but one looks a little different, has more of a tactical look, and that's considered an assault weapon. He promoted community policing as well as cracking down on gun dealers who violate federal law. So nothing really new there, and of course he needs Congress to do a lot of that. So he's saying he's going to be pushing Congress to pass an assault weapons ban. And my favorite, what would be a Democrat program without some social programs and spending to boot? Because we just have to research why people commit gun crimes. We just don't know why they do it. Yeah. It comes down to the left theory that people are a blank slate and that they can be molded into any which way. So if we just have enough social programs, we can get people to do what we want because people don't have a will of their own. They're not created in God's image or fallen. So they're just whatever we make them to be, whatever society makes them to be.
Proven that to be true in the last couple of months, that they can be molded to anything they want them to be. I mean, the government has sure molded a whole segment of our population to a certain extent. So I think they know that firsthand, the left, through brainwashing and state-run media, you can do a lot.
Well, yeah, you never know. So they're just going to keep trying it more. Biden said this isn't a red or blue issue, which means it is. And funny enough, and I'll get off this topic, but he said the Second Amendment from the day it was passed limited the kind of people who could own a gun and what weapon you could own. He said you couldn't own a cannon. But that's just historically inaccurate. Fact checkers, even left-leaning ones like PolitiFact and historians said that's just not true. One more story. I know I spent a lot of time on that. Congressional Republicans are calling on Biden to ratchet up pressure on China for coronavirus. They put forth a proposal of 8 things to punish China, including declassification of intelligence so the people can know what happened, prohibiting gain-of-function research in China, prohibiting the NIH of funding malevolent foreign nations such as North Korea, China, and Iran, an overhaul of the WHO, investigations and utilizing existing authorities in the government to continue investigations, visa restrictions and sanctions on those associated with China and the WHO who were responsible for COVID-19 and the cover-up, waiving Chinese sovereign immunity so that people could actually sue China if they were affected by COVID-19, and relocating the 25th Olympic Winter Olympic Games out of Beijing, because as Kevin McCarthy says, why should we reward China for unleashing a plague on the world and immediately let them host the Olympics?
Great point. Well, all right, let me go to Ag Report. Craig Haggart's up here with our Ag Report. We'll be right back. We've got a lot of things that we want to try to cover. We've got two lines open, so 610-363-1110. Here comes Craig Haggart. We'll be back right after that.
This is Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag update for June 24th. Well, corn was lower yesterday as rain has now made it to the 1 to 5 day forecast. Models are showing near 100% probability of an inch of rain along the Iowa-Illinois border and 85% chance of 2+ inches. On the other hand, the most recent 6 to 10 and 11 to 15 day forecasts look to be a bit drier than the previous forecasts for that time period. On the demand side of the equation, weekly ethanol production was up 23,000 barrels per day, while ethanol stocks came in at 21.12 million barrels. That's the largest stocks number we've seen in the past 13 weeks. Soybeans were higher early in yesterday's session as they are supported by the announcement of the sale of 330,000 metric tons of beans to China. However, once the traders' attention turned back to weather, the market was unable to sustain the early gains and closed lower for the day. It was encouraging to see soybean oil stage a decent rally, which pushed the soybean crush back to its recent highs. Wheat was up double digits with Minneapolis futures leading the way. The rally was the result of forecasts which continue to show hot and dry conditions for the spring wheat areas, with a dome possibly forming the first week in July. Cotton futures saw both old and new crop futures close higher for the day yesterday. At the close, December futures were 130 points higher, closing at 86.94. Livestock futures, on the other hand, were lower straight across the board. At the close, August live cattle futures were 30 cents lower, while August feeder cattle were down $2.65 at the close. Lean hog futures were rocked hard, with the July futures finishing down the $3 limit. Class 3 milk futures seem to have found a support level. After 7 consecutive lower closes, we have now had 2 consecutive higher closes in the spot futures, while the more deferred months were lower once again yesterday. At the close, we had July futures 12 points higher, settling at 1660. Meat cutout values were lower once again as well. Choice box beef was down $3.70, closing at $3.1205. Select boxes were down $4.34 as they settled at $2.7541. Pork carcass cutout values were lower by the slightest of margins. They closed down a penny, settling at $107.82 per hundredweight. This has been Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
All right, 610-363-1110, 610-363-1110. We're back. We're going to get to your phone calls. Shanna Bird is with us. Shanna, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Good to be here.
So we've got a, we're going to get to calls. We've had a busy morning. I've had a busy morning just talking about some things that I didn't plan on going down some of those trails. But we listened to the news and we see what's going on in the economy. We looked at the jobs numbers this morning. We see we're still well over 400,000. They were expecting 380. I wasn't necessarily expecting. I was hoping for to break 400, but not happening. I think it's very interesting that it's been two bad numbers 2 weeks in a row. So it seems like there is somewhat of a rethinking by people. Maybe as jobs keep opening up, they've had opportunity to say, all right, well, I guess I better do the math, you know, and make sure I'm right about this. And it's almost like people are saying, you know what, I'm still better off collecting all this, additional unemployment benefits. And I don't think it's going to change until the government cuts it out. And, mm-hmm. I know there are a number of states that continue to do it, but it's just not impactful enough, I guess. I don't know. But
Or perhaps they're just not realizing that they're going to get cut off yet. And that reality is starting to set in and they're going to start to scramble and look for those things. But, you know, you're right. They still could be better off since a good chunk of that unemployment is not taxable to them.
Yeah, by the time you do the tax-free income and you look, and, you know, I made this case yesterday to somebody, or maybe I was just speaking in general, but saying, you know, you can't say, well, nobody wants to go back to work. You know, If they have any kind of sense, and I believe they do, they're taking a look at the numbers and they're saying, it's actually better for my family if I stay home. Not only am I here at home, but I'm providing in maybe even a better way. Maybe it's only $30 a week more, but nonetheless, you know, they've got to think real hard about that. So, and I think the other side of it is a lot of them just haven't made the effort, though, in that case, to go to their job and say, look, I was getting $15 an hour. You know, if I can get 17, you know, I'll come mm-hmm. back, you know, and I suspect they'd get it. If they were smart, and if any of them are listening, they would do that because nobody's going to take the 17 away. So now they're going to go back to work at 15, eventually start making 17. But in the meantime, they may have lost a year and a half of 17 when they would be, their next raise would be to 18. And so they kind of get behind the eight ball by doing that. But I don't think they're thinking like that, unfortunately.
You know what else I think would be interesting to see what the trend has been in the side gig work, like the people that have a side hustle where they're selling makeup or, you know, vitamins or something else like that to see what that trend has been to supplement their income.
Yeah, there was actually I think it was CNBC, if I'm not mistaken, that actually did a little investigative mm-hmm. reporting about that very thing. And they're saying that their position was that at the end of it all, that it has increased dramatically, not how many people were doing it, but the success of the people that were doing it. So it became much more lucrative. Their ending premise was that it's not going to last. They did better because people were home and it was easier for them to buy and purchase and try those things out rather than go to a store and try things out if it was a product-driven kind of thing. But even some of the other service things that were being offered. So they had tested that and kind of said it definitely has been better in a significant way. I forget what the number was, how much it had gone up. But they also said it was, you know, pandemic driven. And when things mm-hmm. totally open up, that's going to go back to the normal place. I don't know that it'll go back to normal. I think it's probably still going to stay up a bit, but yeah.
They probably had more time to focus on that too. And,
yeah, you know, exactly.
Talk to their friends about it. Get on Facebook.
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Dan and Shannon, it's interesting that you guys both talking about this because I actually feel like in my generation, the side hustle thing is really popular. I mean, so many millennials just love it. And whether they're successful or not so successful, I think it says something about our generation because doing a side hustle, you get to be your own boss. And so a lot of us don't like authority and we want to work when we work and be lazy when we want to be lazy. So it kind of, it's just an interesting little aspect of it too. I've noticed quite a few people my age love it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that might be the reason why or.
Yeah. Well, it's a freedom thing too.
Yeah.
You know, the people your age are much closer to the freedom they had before they ever even worked.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not a distant memory. It's a recent memory for them to have freedom to do whatever you want. And they're getting some of that back. And I think that's a huge attraction.
Yeah. Yeah.
For that generation.
Hopefully that will reignite a commitment to capitalism.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't that be nice? You know, I said to my son-in-law not long ago, who is working from home. He works for a big company. And he works for Vanguard and he's working from home. And he basically said, if he's got to go back to the office, he's quitting. He's already told him that. And, so it is that whole idea of the freedom thing is huge, but it is a very different place that we live in now. And I said, you know, unfortunately, it's breeding one of the biggest problems that I, this is just an old guy talking, that I think we have in America today. Because Shanna, you alluded to capitalism and the resurgence and commitment to capitalism. But you know, the biggest issue that we have today is a fear of failure. And so young people have this fear of failure. And I was being interviewed, it was probably 7 or 8 years ago, maybe longer, maybe even 10 years ago, by somebody that was elaborating on some of the successes that I've had in the business world. And I'm always quick to remind people, which I did to this person, was the successes are irrelevant because I learned very little from successes. I learned from my failures, and I had far more failures than successes. And so he was asking, so what was the thing that kept you going on? And I said, my lack of fear. I didn't care. I didn't care what anybody thought of me. I didn't care if I failed. I just didn't care. I had this typical young invincibility that, you know what? I'm always going to be able to feed my family. I don't care if I got to go paint houses. I'm going to provide for my family because I wasn't afraid to work. So therefore, I wasn't afraid of failure because failure meant I got to move on to something else. And it gave you the wisdom, the failures did, gave you the wisdom to start a little bit smarter this time than you did the last time. But we've lost that. So with that, with losing that, we lose ingenuity and we lose innovativeness. And that the ingenuity and innovativeness has made America what it was, I hate to say, but I guess we can still say what it is. It's made America. So with a fear of failure, you have to lose ingenuity, and that's a huge problem. So I think the millennial generation that is loving the freedom and working and doing these things, and there's something about that to them. Unfortunately, they're not getting over their fear of failure. So
that's right.
How many of them will take to the next level? I know here in the ministry, I love to let people fail. I mean, I think it's because I think it's healthy for us. I think it's healthy for the ministry.
Yep.
We are in a position to allow that. I want something new that we are doing. I'm totally okay with it flopping. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
And, but more importantly, it's learned. And I think I other than a few new hires, I don't think there's anybody here that can deny that that's the atmosphere they work in. And when we make a mistake, I generally say, you know, oh, well, let's not do it again and let's move on. Right. But, you know, we learn so much from it. And, it is really a good thing. So the other thing is it takes away the stress of worrying about failing. So I hope that it takes ownership, they can take ownership of what it is they're doing when they finally do end up with a great creation. It plays a huge part.
Yeah.
So at least we have a small group of people here, you know, learning if they do go out into another world and leave here. They'll be better for that. In the meantime, we'll hopefully get better from it too. But we lost that. You know, we have companies that are you just cost me, you know, X amount of dollars. How could you do that? You know, it isn't. You know, I only ask one thing: don't bring shame to the ministry. If you bring shame to the ministry, I'm going to fire you. I mean, that's just the way it is. It has to be that way because we cannot have a situation where we get loose with the way we're supposed to live our lives. I mean, we can't do that and bring shame to something that God's built. So other than that, man, we got to fail.
Yeah, the other thing that's been such a stumbling block to this generation coming up, too, is that, you know, they grew up in a culture where they got rewarded for everything. You
yes,
know, they got
did.
Trophies just
that's
for participating.
Exactly right.
You know, there was competition was minimized. Everyone, you know, was equal. And I think
it goes back to, Shanna, they never failed because it was always their parents' fault, their coaches' fault, their teachers' fault, their friends' fault. They've grown up in a culture where nothing was their fault. You know, and, you know, I grew up in a culture where it was quite the opposite. Everything was your fault and you need to pay the consequence, you know, so it's a huge difference. All right, 610-363-1110. It's a shame you weren't with us in the break because we just solved the problems of the entire world. Shanna, Seth, and I. So you guys missed it. It was really good. And now I know it's going to happen. Giuliano, are you listening? So years ago, Giuliano thought it would be a cool idea, and he's right. He's right. I never denied he wasn't right. It's just kind of, you know, something we never did. But he's going to say, that's why we should have like special things. If you're watching on Facebook, we'll keep the mics open, you know, and we'll just, and you can hear it. But I've never really embraced that yet. But
on the partner side, how about that?
Yeah, maybe on the partner side, we'll give them something special. But how do you do that? You know, you can't.
Yep.
Anyway, good.
That's not my wheelhouse.
Right. All right. Well, we're going to get to phone 610-363-1110. Let me go to Ken. Ken calling from Texas. Hey, Ken.
Morning, Dan. We're a partner, and we also have been working with Shanna back before she was an unnamed financial advisor.
Good.
Anyway, we have recently sold our house. And we're looking to go RV full time, and we're wondering should we get a loan for part of the RV or pay outright cash for it? You know, with this uncertainty that we're going through, would it be better to have more cash on hand? Mm-hmm.
I would say this to you, Ken. You have the cash, meaning that you'll probably have it 2 years from now. I would say if it becomes burdensome or it seems like it would really be a good idea, then I would pay it off. That may be never. It may be 2 years from now. I would keep a segment of that cash accessible in case that were to happen. But right now, I would... Yeah, I don't know, you know, how what the difference is between, I'm talking about interest rates, of financing an RV compared to a car. I don't know what those numbers are, but I would suspect that no matter what, they're still significantly low. So
yeah, they aren't bad. Christian Community, they've got loans under 6% for RVs. So.
Okay.
It's not too high yet, but with housing being so inflated like it is, we didn't want to buy a house and, you know, go through what the economy did before where everything was overinflated and then it all crashed and everybody was upside down in their mortgage. So
right.
We wanted to kind of push that off for a few years and see if we can get somebody that's reasonable back into the White House and get the economy back on track.
Yeah, and I think that is another good reason not to pay cash for it because you may need that cash, you know, 3 or 4 years from now. So anyway, I mean, I would just rather see you finance it. I think it makes good sense to do that. This is an extreme asset that depreciates rapidly, and the depreciation is big. You know, it's large. So I can't say, you know, it's not as hard an asset as a house or a piece of land would be. So right. I would, I'd rather see you finance it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, sir.
All right,
Ken.
Thank
you, Shannon, for all you do.
Ken, I'm envious all right. that you're going to get that RV and just kind of trailer around. Sounds like such a good thing to me. But anyway, I'll just have to fantasize about it. All right.
We'll
thanks.
Keep you posted.
All right. Thanks, Ken. Yeah, let me know. Yeah. Hey, let me know when you get really miserable with it so I can feel good about not doing it.
All right. That's a deal.
All right. Thanks, Ken. Okay. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Yep. Okay, bye.
Let me go to JR, Virginia. Go ahead, Shanna.
I was just going to say, you know, there's a lot of value in not having a lot of debt. I mean, I think that's a good thing. But I think, you know, sometimes we can go too extreme in that. You know, I hear you say all the time advising people not to pay cash for a depreciating asset. But what we have to remember about debt, and this goes along with what you just told Ken, is that if you have the cash to pay for a liability that you have, you're not in debt. You're just paying a lot. You have a month, you have an obligation for a monthly liability, and you haven't tied up your cash in that asset. So you still have access to it.
And you're paying a little interest to maintain that access.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, look, it's a small price. I mean, if interest rates were 14, 15%, that'd be a different story. But yeah, you're right. That's a great point. Yep. All right. Let me go to JR in Virginia. Hey, JR.
Hello, Dan. Thank you very much for your ministry. Given the current conditions of our economy, I want to sell my home, which is valued at $550,000, with a mortgage of $150,000. So I will probably get a $400,000 cash, and I want to buy a smaller house or smaller property, let's say $300,000, and that will leave me with $100,000. Is that a good idea? Will that be something that you recommend?
Well, I think it's a great idea, you know, the way you're thinking. Unfortunately, the smaller house is up in value too.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So that's the only issue. But I think it's a I think it's still a good idea. You're getting rid of the mortgage. You're ending up with $100,000 in cash, and I think it's a great idea. You know, I mean it's essentially what we did, kind of unplanned. Now we had the best of both worlds. We sold our house at an inflated price, the house we've been living in for 35 years. And we had already owned a house in Florida before the prices went up. So, but it is a great scenario when you're downsizing to be able to do that. So I think it's fine. I wouldn't be concerned about buying a smaller house and that's still inflated a little bit. I would do it. That's probably the house you're going to be living in the rest of your life, and I'm okay with that.
Well, yeah, not that's second part of the story is that we are planning to retire in about 5 years and go back to Peru in South America. So we would like to have that. We will sell that house plus that $100,000. So we will have some money to go there and purchase a property over there and live there with that money.
Okay. So my concern with that would be we could see in another year, we could see 4 years of depreciating value. That could be a concern. I mean, I don't think it's going to depreciate huge amounts like it has appreciated, but I think we're going to see some depreciation. So if the buying market begins to dry up because of recession or layoffs, lack of work, or whatever might happen in the economy, then you're in a situation where even though you might not have a mortgage on that house or be underwater or something, but you may be you know, taking a little bit of a hit on what you paid for that house. So if you paid $150 for it, you know, you might be selling it for $125. Still not the end of the world, and you got the use of the house for 5 years or 4 years. But I would still just throw that out to you. So you do understand that there will be, in these inflated prices that we have in our market, there will be a time of somewhat deflation there and things coming back to some sense of normalcy, because it's not just a demand reason. It's a supply chain reason. It's, if it were just demand, I would say the prices would hold a little bit better. But because of so much of the rise in prices were due to lack of supply chain, so inflation due to just higher demand compared to inventories and those kinds of things. So that money, you know, recovers back to where it was rather quickly. So I would just, I would just say that to you, just to kind of give you an understanding.
I would. And how would I invest $100,000? Should I buy some gold?
No. I mean, gold's done nothing but go down for 2 weeks because of the threat of inflation. Gold's not the inflation play that it used to be, and we've seen proof of that in the last 2 to 3 weeks. But, you know, the concerns about inflation, you see what we've seen. Oil prices go up. Oil is a great trade. But I if you're talking 3 or 4 years, I would be extremely cautious because, look, the odds of us not going into recessionary times in the next 4 years are extremely slim. It's going to happen. So this is a short term, would be a short term investment. I wouldn't do much with it. I would put it in inflation protected bonds, leave it sit, maybe a couple utility stocks, but I would invest half of it into maybe some utility stocks, some things that will be somewhat protected against inflation. But other than that, I'd keep the rest in as cash if you can do it.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thanks, JR. You. I appreciate it. I wish you all the best. God bless. We'll be back. Our lines are open. You'll be the next call we take. 610-363-1110. We'll be back after this.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it. 610-363-1110. Let me go to Eric. Eric's calling us from Nevada. Hey, Eric.
Hello?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here. Eric, you there?
I can hear him.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I have two homes. I have one that I've had for the last 20 years, and I paid $133 for it, and now it's worth somewhere upwards of $250,000. And I live in it kind of part-time. It's close by to my other one, about close to seven years in October. I'll be in this house 7 years, and the price went up on these homes to about $435 or $450, and I financed $325, and I owe about $280 on it now. And I don't rent the other one out. I've had numerous people ask me, and I just choose not to. I hold it as an investment. And as I'm getting older, I wanted to know what I should do. Should I sell the big home to pay off the small home, or should I sell the small home to take the principal and roll it into the larger home. I'm concerned about tax implications because I know that you have to live in a home for the last 2 out of 5 years to be like tax exempt, to walk away with your profit. And I don't live in the other one that much, the smaller one.
Yeah.
I live in the bigger one. And I'm a single guy, and I don't have anybody really I can ask.
Yeah.
You know, my family's back east and everything, and I'm by myself.
I would say to you, Eric, if you're, I mean, I would go strictly by desirability. Which one would you rather stay in? I mean, I know that sounds kind of simplistic or silly, but there's really, obviously, from a tax perspective, it would be far better to sell the big one. So if you really don't want to pay that tax, then I would sell the big one. If you're okay with the tax, then I would sell it now. Make sure you sell it like this year. I wouldn't wait.
Yeah.
I would just say, hey, this is in an up and coming neighborhood. This is in a better neighborhood. Or this house is more than I need, more than I want. And I like the neighborhood and the other one. I mean, I would really, this is closer to my job, closer to my work, closer to what I do, you know, for recreation or whatever. I mean, I think that's the only way you could choose. I mean, you know, this is is it in the Las Vegas area?
Yeah, they're three miles apart from each other. One's on one side of the South Point in Highlands Ranch.
Yeah.
And one's in Silverado Ranch. They're very close by.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to rent the other one out for the last 5 years. It might have been foolish on my part, but
no, you know, I think now that's, they I think that's more, fine. I think it's fine. Yeah, I don't think it's foolish.
Now that they had the moratorium and everything, I mean, the law is more on the side of the renters to get people out and everything.
Sure.
You know, so I probably would have not even get paid. But, you know, it keeps my house in good shape and everything like that.
Yeah.
And I think probably the best thing is to sell the big one and pay off the small one and be mortgage free.
Yeah.
Because I'm almost 59. And I just kind of plan on, I've never invested in 401ks. I guess I was foolish. And I could have did it a dozen years ago, you know, to where my coworkers, one of them just retired and he's probably got $1 million.
Right.
And my action of recourse is just to kind of live simply. I don't have a wife. I don't have a kid. I might go back to Idaho and buy some property and just live a simple life and collect my Social Security at 62.
Right.
I'm a former veteran. I think I could get my, you know, the drugs that I take. Mm-hmm. You know, from the VA and stuff like that, you know, and maybe pay into a little bit of, you know, that's the big thing, to have some medical, you know, because I do utilize it, you know.
I'm
a little confused in that sense, you know. I don't want to pay taxes on something that I felt that I earned.
Right.
You know, I don't want to give up any money because I might need, you know, what I could do is sell both houses and have $250,000 and live off $60,000 a year for the next 4 years and then collect my Social Security.
Yeah.
That would reduce my stress immensely.
Yeah.
I think. But there's a tax liability. I'm not too sure. Like if I take cash on the other one, you know, because I'm kind of living in both houses. I've never rented it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I've never, you know.
If I were you, Rick, Eric, if I were you, I would just, you know, I would sell the big house, pay off the mortgage. I wouldn't sell them both because you just, you know, you could retire in 5 years and you'll have that house to sell then. I would, and you won't have to pay any tax on it. I think you sell the big house, pay the mortgage off, you're living frugally, continue to work or whatever is keeping you there. And listen, Las Vegas is, I mean, it's nuts what's happening with a growth perspective there. The growth may start to slow down, but what has already happened is not going to change. It's going to stay. And, you know, you're still going to have a valuable property. And then you can accumulate your money. You can move somewhere else and live simply. But that's what I would do. I think that's your best bet. It's your smartest thing to do. You end up getting a lot of appreciation on two houses that you've never paid tax on in the long run. If you sell the other house and move somewhere else in 4 or 5 years, I think that's the smartest thing that you can do. And that's what I think you ought to do.
Yeah. You know, I'm not a tax professional, but you know, usually the way that they, since you've lived in both homes, the way to tell which one is your primary or which one counts for those 2 or 5 years is, you know, whichever one your driver's license says, whichever one your documents say, if your insurance says one is primary, one is secondary, because you can't really have two primaries, or if, you know, I don't know if there's property tax in Nevada, but if you're getting a homestead exemption, that's the way to tell which one was your primary home. So, you know, if you sell your primary home, then you don't have that capital gains tax. So whichever one you land on, you know, you might, and if you have a little bit of time to do it, you might want to make that your primary and then, you know, do a longer term plan. Like Dan says, sell the other one later. So after you sell that one, the other one becomes your primary. And, you know, there's a 2-year time period there. But, you know, if you've got the time to do it and you think it out and have a strategy, that might save you some money on taxes.
Yeah. And that just takes you back to the, you know, selling the big house and paying off the small one, I think, the way I understand it. And I think that's what you need to do. I mean, I
think my ultimate goal is to be mortgage free, so I don't have the stress of worrying about that.
Right, and that's frees up cash flow for you to save, and that's the beauty of it. You know, so you're giving yourself a huge discretionary income boost. By paying that mortgage off. And that makes the most sense. Thank you, Eric. I sure do appreciate you. Glad you called. Let me go to Rick in Georgia. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dan. Just don't want to take up too much of your time, but I did want to say we appreciate you. We appreciate your staff, all the stuff that you do for us. And on top of that, you're a phone call away. That's just amazing and awesome.
Thank you.
Well, I'm a partner and a giver, and we support, you know, most anything that you, you know, got going on there at your ministry. But my question is, my son is 27 years old. He's just started a lawn business. He's, you know, doing everything great. He's praying about it and seeking God and buying his equipment without going into debt. But I was talking to him the other day and I said, you really need to get some type of investment, you know, for your future. And he was all in on it. And my thinking was that I could just set up a small, you know, thing for him to kind of get used to the idea, you know, and go into the Timothy plan. And I think that you've said, 70, 10, 10, 10 divided up into that Timothy plan all the way from large caps all the way down to some of the international funds.
Yeah.
My question is, how much should he give and how often should he give while he's, you know, not really understanding what he's doing? He's into it. He's really realized that the growth will be good to him over a period of time. But until he really gets a full understanding of investments and stocks and things like that, we wanted to just get him into a plan, get his feet wet, and him being regularly giving. So what's your recommendation on the amount and how often?
I wouldn't worry too much about the amount. I would just worry about the regularity. So if he's going to do it every month, I don't care if it's $10. I think you ought to do it every month. I wouldn't get hung up on an amount. I think developing the discipline to do it every month and see it, he's got a growing business. He has to be thinking about, hey, you know, I could have a piece of equipment die. I got to buy a new piece. You know, we don't want to, it's not a good time of his business to maybe eat up any kind of discretionary kind of monies that he can use. But I wouldn't worry about amounts, Rick. I think he sounds like he is a disciplined guy. He's on the right track. you sound like you want to help and you're doing all the right things. I would go ahead and start. If he can do $25 a month, if he can do 50, if he can do 100, maybe some months he can do 100, some months he does 10. Stay consistent and get it started. That's the important part. I got to run, okay. Rick. I thank you, brother. I appreciate
you. Thank you so much.
Great, great question. Thank you for your encouragement. God bless. All right, folks, if you got to leave us, have a great day. Rapid Fire Friday tomorrow. I hope you'll be back with us. We got another hour left here today.
Jesus said, go sell all that you have, give it to the poor, take up the cross, follow me. It's not your money I want your heart.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.